And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's the KMA Late Afternoon Show with Larry Shannon.
They warned you I would come back and do another afternoon with you, didn't they? 29 degrees here at KMA. Larry Shannon with you on a, well, I'm looking up through the KMA Sky Dome, and it looks pretty clear up there. Blue skies. You never look at the sky when you're driving down the road, or I don't. You know, and only when I come in a building here at KMA do I really pay attention to what the sky is like, unless it's snowing or something else. We are getting ready to get on the phone with Michael King, who died twice. And he's going to share his true story of what actually happens beyond the tunnel of light. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here with you.
Well, it is good to have you with us. Where are you?
I'm in Southern California, enjoying at the moment some blue skies in between several little rain flurries we've had in the last few days. Southern California is funny. We get a rain flurry, and the weather people locally treat it like it's the Armageddon of the universe. But just because we don't know how to handle rain very well in California.
Do people run inside and hide from the rain?
Well, if you listen to the weather stations, they tend to induce a state of panic and fear, but but for the most part, we can make it.
Well, you know, one of the things about death is that it's so fascinating, and everybody has a different idea of what happens when you die. It's like, for instance, I had a good friend of mine die recently, middle of the night, had a heart attack, and it was over. And we had just been talking a day or so before, and it was just such a shock, because I think a lot of times we think about our own selves and how we're going to go, how we're going to die, what it would be like. And, you know, it's on everybody's mind, because eventually we all go.
Yes, true enough. I wrote the book Atheist Can Get to Heaven. First of all, it seems like such an oxymoron for a lot of people. Anyway, I wrote the book because I wanted people to be able to experience my own personal journey in the sense of what happened in my life that led up to these events of entering clinical death. And I can also say that it is with a peace of mind, with a sense of self-confidence, not arrogance, but a sense of self-confidence, a sense of I have led an ethical life, that the process, knowing that my body is dying, which was my second clinical death, the first one was much more abrupt, no preparation, in other words, but the result was that it was a very peaceful experience. It was almost majestic. I remember when I was talking to some friends after the story had been revealed to them, that I said, if I could make a potion like this, that the beauty and wonderment, almost like a wild-eyed child seeing something for the first time, if I could sell that as a potion, I'd have the planet addicted in about 15 minutes, just because it is such a magnificent experience. And pushing the journey, as they say, and Atheists Can Get to Heaven, pushing the journey beyond the tunnel of light, which I concluded was a boundary, something that needed to be explored, that move beyond that and explore more, I thought, gee, you know, heaven can't be just this little boundary. It's got to be more. So that's what I did, and I had some very dramatic experiences that I want the readers to share with me.
Well, what's the truth about near-death experiences? Are they different for different people?
I think there's a lot of commonality. I qualify this by saying I've only heard bits and pieces from different news reporters, mainly. I have never read a Betty Eady book about the going into the tunnel of light or any of that sort of thing. So basically what I bring to this is a sense of my own objective experience, because I'm not programmed by listening to others. But from what I've understood, there have been a number of experiences where people die, hover up near the ceiling of the ER as their surgeons are working on their bodies and trying to bring them back to life. Or they go beyond that and they enter this warm, white, magnificent realm of peaceful fog, and sometimes in that fog they meet other people, meet relatives, meet a biblical figure perhaps. I wanted to see what was beyond that, so I penetrated that boundary sphere of life. flight to see what else might be available. And it was a pretty dramatic experience. It was, if I'd had a body at the time, I would have called it breathtaking.
So you were you in the floating stage? Is that where you were?
Well, I went through several layers. The first is, for me, was a fade to black. Then I came out of the fade to black, hovering over the ER in kind of a translucent fog, where you can see, you know, we've all been in fog at one point in time or another, and you can see things through the fog, right? There's a translucency. And then I found the fog seemed to be a boundary condition that I intuitively thought was confining. So I decided to explore the fog, and as I explored the fog, this realm of white light, I'm being very gentle here in the way I describe this, it seemed to be increasing in its density, like if you were in a fog bank and it was becoming thicker and thicker and thicker to the point where you couldn't see, very opaque, in other words. And I decided, whoa, this isn't good. This might be a trap. So I thought, well, what happens if I push myself into this and see if I can pop out or see what happens? It was an exploration. If you feature yourself in a situation where you already know your body is dying and that you have entered clinical death, if you're consciously aware of that, then I think the decision is, well, I'm dead anyway or dying anyway. What's beyond that point? I don't have anything to lose, right?
We're talking with Michael King about his tunnel of light and near-death experiences. Actually, you died twice. I wanted to ask you, how can atheists and non-believers in God get into heaven? Is there room for both? Are there qualifications? What's the answer to that?
Oh, absolutely. The point is self-esteem and believing in your own ethical life. It's less involved with worshiping a deity or the concept of a deity, and more about finding your own creation within yourself. There's many different social opinions and medical opinions about it, but certainly there's room for both, because in my journey, I actually came to have a meeting with Jesus, as incredible as that might seem, and what I learned from that was a very large redefinition of what it's about.
Well, we will be back in just a moment with Michael King, who died twice, and he's sharing his true story of what actually happens beyond the tunnel of light. 316 here at KMA.
Larry Shannon.
320 here at KMA with Larry Shannon, looking out through the Sky Dome again here at KMA. I almost fell backwards in the chair, so, you know, I could have had a pretty near-death experience right there. Speaking of which, we are talking to Michael King. Fascinating topic about death, near-death experiences. And a couple of things I wanted to talk to you about heaven. What is heaven? Is it a place? Is it something that you flow through? And also about biblical creation and Darwinian evolution. Can you talk a little bit about those?
Certainly. Heaven is a state of being rather than a place. If you took your infinite consciousness and managed to get it out of your body, where you had all of your thoughts, feelings, emotions intact, what would you do? Well, you could travel. You could go into space, quite literally. So heaven is, for me, and in my experience, as I write in the book, Atheists Can Get to Heaven, a state of being, and it's profoundly energetic, it's profoundly dynamic, and it is life-changing if you come back to life to retell the experience. The Darwinian form, and I might add the atheist form, are not exactly correct in the sense that atheists, for the most part, have what I call a die-hard, pun intended, by the way, condition where all ends at organic death. Well, I have survived clinical death. I've gone far beyond that, and I know that all does not end at organic death. Therefore, the belief system of an atheist is as frail as the belief system of a suicide bomber that thinks, well, I'll strap on this C4 and go out and murder people, and I'll be rewarded because I've done God's work. It's not about that. It's about not usurping energy from another person. It's about not wasting your energy in needless angers or depressions or low self-esteem. The person that says, it doesn't matter what I do in my life because everything I do is at Jesus's direction. Well, that person is not taking responsibility for their life. That person has just deeded over their self-esteem to and their sense of themselves to a figure that they may not even know how to connect to. So the point is that it's about self-responsibility. And in that respect, it touches on what Darwin says. Darwin says that everything evolves naturally, that there is an evolutionary process that starts from the organic. And I continue that to say it moves beyond that. It moves to the inorganic. It moves to the post-physical.
Now, you mentor on self-esteem, and it was fascinating to me to learn that you are one of the world-renowned leaders in systems integration with electromagnetic waves and fields. Is that how you became interested, because of the waves and the electromagnetism out there in near death? And what is a clinical death?
Well, clinical death means the body is rapidly altering its state and becoming non-functional, where people will say, if no other intervention occurred, the person would be dead, end of story. So that's how I would define clinical death.
Now, is that like the Flatliners movie?
In a way. It's been a long time since I've seen that one.
Yeah, it basically, and I think I saw bits and pieces of it because it wasn't that exciting, and I fell asleep during a portion of it. But it's where young people and, some in their 20s and 30s would go into the lab, and they would die. And then at that last moment, they would snap back to life, and then they would record all the information about it and talk about it. That's what I remember from the movie.
Yes, that's what I remember from the movie, except that the idea of taking a natural risk like that is rather absurd to me. And because they did it chemically, I am not sure that what they got out of that was a valid experience. Dying is not a artificial chemical induced process. It's not a hallucinogenic sort of process with the people that say I'll take LSD or psychedelic mushrooms and I'll go find God are just deluding themselves, in my opinion.
Yeah, and everybody has a different idea. Years ago when I was in high school, personal story real quick, I was 17, had a very good friend, and we had gone through Boy Scouts together and knew each other for years, since we were in the first or second grade. And then how I was in the band and he was in football, so we didn't get together when we got into high school. So we sort of, grew apart as far as like seeing each other. But there was another friend, a mutual friend, and he and my friend were always talking about death and what it was like, and each one had a different idea. And then my friend committed suicide when he was 17 with a shotgun. And it was just a big shock because I never thought that he would do it. And I often wonder whether or not he was thinking so much about that, along with our mutual friend, and talking about it, that just made him do it. We will never know, but it was a shock in my life.
Well, I had come to a point of depression that was so severe because of circumstances in my life that as I write in the book, Atheists Can Get to Heaven, I mentioned that and this was a very difficult part to write, because for me it was profoundly emotional to go back and relive those events of 35 years ago. But I had come to that point of thinking that it was a logical management decision that I should just end it all, kill myself, stop the struggle. Now I realize that is not responsibility to myself. It's not responsibility to my own evolutionary or development process. Sometimes evolution is a charged, loaded word for people, but it's really a development. It's really a sequence of development. And you mentioned my field about electromagnetic waves and physics. And it occurred to me about, in the 60s, I was picking up some research that we were doing in government experiments about how the physical body or the mind responds to electromagnetic waves and fields. There's been a lot of research on this, actually, much more than the public might be aware of. And it occurred to me as a hypothesis that sentience, the consciousness of what religions would call a soul, is really a quantum electrodynamic form of energy. And we already know that once energy is launched, electromagnetic energy is launched into space, it continues forever. It is literally infinite. The same way the electromagnetic energy fields of light from the edges of the universe, if the universe has edges, but to the extent that we can see them, propagates forever. So why not consciousness? Why not? Because we already know the body is a bioelectrical event, a series of events, consciousness, an electro event. And now I'm delighted to see that there's researchers working on this, the consciousness electromagnetic field theory of consciousness.
Well, it's just fascinating to me, life and death and everything in between. And I've always been fascinated by the supernatural and all sorts of strange experiences that I've been through. In fact, one of my best dreams is that I'm floating in the air and I can actually levitate, not too high, maybe 150 feet above the ground, and then I can move and it seems a lot easier. Is that sort of like what that floating that you had talked about is?
Yes, except there's no physicality in the sense of air pressure or movement. There's sort of an electrified feeling to it, but not in the sense that your body is levitating, because obviously you don't have your body. The visibility point would be like that. I would suggest to you the next time you find yourself doing that to move your altitude higher and see what happens.
All right, I will do that, because I have that dream about maybe once every month and a half or so. We have run out of time, but I want you, Michael King, to tell folks how to find out more about you. Do you have a website?
The book has a website, www.atheistcangettoheaven.com. All run together as one long term. There are reader reviews. It has a link to Amazon. It has other radio interviews I've done that you can hear with other hosts posted on the website. It's available through Amazon.
Well, wonderful. And it's been a joy having you with us today. A lot of very interesting things to talk about. And I guarantee you we will continue this discussion at a later time on another day.
Mary Shannon.